From industrial and agricultural zones to stormwater systems to conservation areas, every catchment encompasses a diverse array of habitats, economic functions, and communities. What might we accomplish if collaboration and partnership around catchment monitoring matched the diversity of the catchment itself? This is the guiding question behind Additive Catchments, a subsidiary of the UK-based nonprofit organization Additive Earth, whose diverse team of partners is working to shift approaches to water quality monitoring through cross-sector collaboration. Additive formed as a response to the UK's 2021 Environment Act. We covered the EA in a previous episode of Aquapod, with particular attention to its requirements for monitoring combined sewer overflows. You can find a link to that conversation in the show notes. Since then, we've seen the release of Section 82, which specifies how water companies are required to meet monitoring regulations. Section 82 is moving the needle on EA measures, but a host of questions remain. How can organizations ensure the data they collect is accurate, reliable, and actionable? How can they translate this data into effective remediation? And what other uses can this large volume of data support? Can the transparency and reporting required by the EA rebuild public trust? Hi, everyone. Welcome to Aquapod, where we share water monitoring stories from the field. I'm Anne-Marie Delfino, content writer with In-Situ, and I'm here to discuss these questions with Tom Stone, In-Situ Regional Sales Manager for Southern UK and Ireland, and Rob Passmore, CEO and co-founder of Additive Earth. Thank you both for joining me. To start, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves and what's involved in your work?
Hi, thank you for being here. I'm Tom Stone. I've been with In-Situ for coming up to 14 years now and in the industry for coming up to 20 years. My background is more on groundwater, which is a bit more hidden than surface water. And it's only really the last sort of 5 or 6 years my focus has been a bit more on surface water. So it's been a bit of a change in direction on that front for me. My role with In-Situ is I'm a regional field sales manager for the south of the UK and Ireland. I cover the lower half of the mainland of the UK and the small island of Ireland. So I'm often hopping over there.
Hi, Tom. It's good to see you. I'm Rob Passmore. I'm the chief exec and co-founder of Additive Earth and Additive Catchments. Additive Earth is the non-profit parent company that is launching a series of nature and climate ventures. Additive Catchments is our first venture focused on environmental monitoring and river health. I'm based in the UK. Our business is based in the UK, but has global aspirations.
How was it you first sort of came across In-Situ or got in contact with us?
Oh, let me go back one step in terms of kind of what we're trying to do. So Additive Catchments is a direct response to the fact that we're making terrible decisions in nature, and largely because we don't measure enough of the implications of the decisions that we make. We continue to do bad things because we don't know their impact, and we stop doing good things because we don't know their impact. And the result of that is, you know, as a society, we're not being particularly good stewards of the environment and the natural world. And that isn't... It's hitting hardest with rivers and climate, but rivers especially. So Additive Catchments has really been set up to bring a different systemic solution to that rather than trying to do business as usual. So for us, it's not around putting a few sondes in a river and seeing how it is today at one location. It's how do we create a new kind of catchment nervous system, which is enabling better diagnostics of problems and sources of problems to be identified. We came across each other because you guys are, you know, globally a leader in terms of hardware solutions for making that happen. Working with Atkins Realis, who are a member of our partnership, they helped us to complete a market analysis of best fit hardware to achieve that mission. And whilst we are sensor agnostic, we default to In-Situ as our main multi-parameter sonde provider because of the fantastic product you guys make.
I know that Section 82 really does focus on the sewer overflows.
Yeah.
But I would tend to agree that to approaching this problem with a wider view is a much more sensible approach. Have you heard, or has that sort of message come back positively from the water companies you've spoken to so far?
Yeah, they have, Tom. I mean, again, let me just do a little explainer here of what Section 82 is. So we're based in the UK. We're not focused exclusively on the UK, but it's certainly kind of our initial focus. And the reason for that is the UK is one of the first countries to bring through a storm overflow continuous water quality monitoring regulation that is forcing all water companies to do up and downstream monitoring of every single storm overflow in England over the next 10 years. It is the largest environmental monitoring program the world has ever seen. It is complex and large, and its infrastructure, you know, it's the only way to think about it. Our focus on the UK really is because of that regulatory driver that is forcing density of sensors into our river catchments. But we're looking at how we can leverage that to bring significant additional benefits to water companies through looking at it much more as a system of rivers, but also non-water company stakeholders as well. And how we can, for example, help to inform agriculture where there are problems, identify point sources and diffuse sources of pollution, and look at how we could accelerate the transition from grey infrastructure in utilities, looking at, for example, stripping phosphate from water, and instead think about nature-based solutions that could do that, that are currently held back because the monitoring isn't in place to really understand if they're working or not to the level that would need to be assured potentially from a regulatory perspective. So we are absolutely about meeting the regulatory compliance for the water companies that we work with as customers. But it's like, what else? You know, that's not enough. We see that almost like the hygiene factor of like, yeah, we've got to do that. But this is somewhere between a $5 and a $10 billion program over the next 10 years. If there's only one use case, what a waste. Let's look at every high-value use case for the water company, how they can improve their operations, how could they improve their capital planning to be able to target on things. But outside of that as well, how can we inform government around policy? How can we help to identify where highways are a significant source of really toxic chemicals into our rivers to expand that scope?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously speak to a lot of our distribution around Europe, especially a very much eyes on the UK to see where we're going to go with this, where it will end up. So I totally agree with you. If it can be used as an even bigger advert, more so than just saying these storm overflows aren't operating how they are.
There are two things, and they're related, but they're not directly related. So there is a mixed bag of environmental performance from the water companies. And the impact of that is incredibly low public trust in the water company's stewardship of our rivers. And we've just completed some national survey work across the UK, 4,000 adults surveyed around their sentiment towards river health. And there are some startling facts that kind of really boiled up from that. So only 10% of the British public will trust a water company on what they say around environmental performance. 65% would trust a mission-focused third party that was reporting it. So straight away, there's a trust issue here that needs to be addressed, irrespective of the performance. For example, Severn Trent consistently have 4 out of 5 environmental performance stars, but their public trust is really low, because a lot of their activity, they communicate directly themselves, and it's just not getting, that message isn't getting through. So I think there's some interesting things here around the actual environmental performance that we're monitoring with the hardware, and also communications challenge, because even if you smash the environmental performance, the public isn't going to believe you at this point. So there's a dual challenge here of we've got to do both and realize that they aren't, one does not directly result in the other.
Yeah, certainly from my kind of viewpoint, I work a lot with the boots on the grounds in the water companies, and you can tell a lot of those people have got very good intentions, and yet they're still getting sort of pounded by the public for good reasons and bad reasons, I suppose. It would be good to have a third party come in and sort of give the public a bit more of a, this is where it's actually at. This is the way forward.
And can I ask a follow-up question? It seems like in terms of rebuilding trust, the transparency and accountability to the data and to sharing that data publicly is a big piece of this. But Tom, you brought up earlier that there is also some concern around sharing that or publicizing it too quickly if the public hasn't been educated in how to interpret the data or the data hasn't been analyzed properly. Can you speak a little bit to that tension? You know, it seems like a necessity to have accountability and transparency, but what does that look like in a way that actually rebuilds trust and doesn't further damage it?
Yeah, and that starts before you even install the equipment. That's where AtkinsRéalis, who are one of the largest environmental consulting firms in the world, do the catchment installation planning work for us to work out where the sensors should go in to get good data. So it starts there in terms of good data, starting with install location. Capgemini do a lot of work on data cleansing as the data comes through from the in-situ multi-parameter sondes. We work with the river trusts in the UK to engage with the public around this data as well, which again is around bringing endorsement and trust through for that. And we also have arm's length academic validation of our data by the University of Plymouth in the UK. They provide what we call it mystery shopper or mystery dipper tests, where they will go out, take samples alongside our installed infrastructure and check that it is accurate based on what we were saying. So it's basically keeping the network honest across the whole network. So it's not just comparing one sonde in one test in one lab. It is a continual validation of that hardware going being tested out in the field. There's a tension here and a nervousness, I think, of water companies to put this information out because of the potential to get wrong-footed on it, or for it to say something that they aren't ready for. Our approach is to work more collaboratively with them and the public to maintain better control of the narrative. Here's a location. Let's say there's a problem. It's highlighting, well, what work has already gone on at that location to try and address it? What work is planned and when is it due to happen? And how, once that has happened, has the data changed? So it's bringing this context together with the data to help provide a true story. And if they're messing up, we need to be telling that story as honestly as if they're not. And water companies do tend to get blamed more for river health than their contribution to it. Agriculture has an enormous impact that the public don't understand around river health at the moment. And there is an education piece that needs to be done in tandem with this.
I agree. The public are very, quite rightly, upset about the state of the rivers. And it's probably, in a lot of ways, it's the public outcry that's almost forced the Environment Act through to where it's going to go. But at the same time, I do know that there's loads of good people in the water companies who are doing their best to say the data will kind of, like you say, either say, yep, it's absolutely terrible, or it's in this state, here's where we go forward from here. So
it will be, Tom. I think, as a the language that we keep using is diagnostic tool. Let's just deal with the facts and the problems. Otherwise, because what's going on at the moment is it's a bit like someone being diagnosed with cancer, but you don't know where, so let's have surgery. That's basically what the water companies are being asked to do, right? And it's like, well, where's the cancer? I can't cut someone open until I know where, you know, what type, but et cetera, and the diagnostics just aren't there at the moment. You know, the reality is there isn't a single river in the UK that is in good environmental status, and 82% are in poor ecological status. You know, the reasons for not achieving good, it's about 30%, 40% that are from the water sector, and 60%+ is from agriculture. Some from housing, some from industry, and some unknown. But it's certainly not one. It's not just the water company's fault. I'm not letting them off the hook. We all need to take accountability for our reasons for not achieving good. But we're being naive if we think that just addressing the water sector's challenges with river health will improve our rivers. We have to take it in a catchment-wide way. Otherwise, nothing's going to change.
One of the very early things that became clear when we were talking was additive sort of want to sort of pursue new technologies wherever possible. I know you're doing a presentation with SWIG in a month or so about AI, which is seems a bit more of a buzzword, and machine learning than anything else. And for me, the whole Section 82 probably won't work the way it needs to without machine learning. I mean, there'll be just a crazy amount of data going straight out there. Is that something that you're looking a lot into, and with the presentation in a month's time, in particular, virtual parameters, so using the parameters we're starting off with and using machine learning to train them to give an indication of other parameters that may be, or other substances that may be in the water causing those parameters to shift?
AI, oh my God, look, if AI isn't pretty central to any business at this point, you're missing a trick. We're looking very seriously at how AI can be applied to improving river health, and it's really three specific areas. How can we use it to infer? How can we use it to predict? And how can we use it to explain? So if we take those each in turn, so inferring is really around working with the University of Plymouth and other academic institutions based in science and academic rigor. How can we infer different parameters like phosphate or non-measured parameters from secondary parameters? This is a key area that we're looking at. We think there's a lack of academic rigor that's been applied to this, though, and there's a massive difference between inferring something and measuring it, and you need to be really aware of that, look at your confidence levels, and look at tolerances around it.
I do agree, certainly, especially if you start inferring things like E. coli, for example, which could have a life or death effect if you get it wrong. So
yeah, our view is like inferring is an incredibly useful tool. The kind of things that we're really thinking about is a stretch of river where you've got a need for, say, three monitoring stations, but that middle one you could remove and instead infer using software the monitoring from that location by extrapolating from the data from the upstream and the downstream location. So that's one use case, but all of these need to be validated very, very heavily with in-field testing, with academic papers published about them to make sure that this is all science-based, and we're not making stuff up. Because as you say, this can be life and death, or organisations can make multi-million pound investment decisions off the back of it, and it needs to be right. Prediction is massive, so that's really around looking to the future. So predicting, for example, a permit breach that is going to happen in 6 hours based on rain forecast and historic data, because that information can then potentially prevent that through operational decisions that could get made within the water company to drain down attenuation tanks or to take some intervention operationally that they could do. So huge, huge opportunities around the uses of prediction and explaining this both within the water company, but also to the public. The public don't want to see a graph of dissolved oxygen and conductivity. They want to understand if it's safe to go into the river. So it's really kind of how do we take these trends and insights and use it to explain that information in ways that are more digestible for different users and scenarios. So yeah, we're looking really heavily at all three. It's going to be huge. It's going to be absolutely huge, AI in environmental monitoring.
One of the biggest concerns I have, certainly, and where I think AI could help is the whole challenge of getting this data into the public eye within an hour. I think that's, if anybody's not quite frankly slightly terrified about the speed in which we're making data that could be unqualified available to the public, that's one thing that I think AI and algorithms and machine learning could certainly help with. To stop data that's, for whatever reason, not correct, causing panic.
Well, you know, all it takes is a slug to crawl over the lens of a sensor for all sorts of crazy readings to come through. And we need to be cleaning that anomaly detecting that data. So absolutely, that is a critical step too in terms of data cleansing, having the raw files available, but then also, you know, validating, you know, what is actually going on through that cleansing process. We think there's value in that being done separate from a water company, from a public trust perspective. Otherwise, it just opens the water company up to, well, you've just removed the big events because you called it an anomaly, et cetera, and once again, public trust will drop and so will social license to operate.
Funny enough, this is the second conversation I've had about slugs on water quality equipment today. So it's always a fun day in the office.
We've built a partnership with Atkins Realis, who drafted the Section 82, which is the part of the Environment Act, the regulation that is driving this activity in the UK. They drafted the technical guidance. They've helped us to design a housing product range for the multi-parameter SONS for different catchment contexts as well, because we felt that there weren't models out there available on the market that really were fit for purpose for this continuous 5 to 10 year deployment of equipment in the field. So this is something, again, we've worked really closely with in situ on in terms of making sure it's fit for purpose, it's able to work with the telemetry, with the SONS, etc., and it's very easy and safe to maintain on bankside.
After Section 82, you've mentioned a lot about sort of more complete catchment monitoring. I'm quite a fan of almost a swarm monitoring approach that with fewer parameters, really widespread. Because, I mean, Section 82 is one thing, but it probably isn't feasible to repeat that, putting a sond out on every single entry into a river, every single runoff from a motorway, every single runoff from a farm. Is that something that you've sort of thought about, sort of just basically swarming the rivers with dissolved oxygen sensors, for example, and using that to kind of pinpoint where we might need to do a bit more, et cetera?
Yeah, I think sensor density is a real question. And I think this is where you get into, well, a combination of machine learning, hydrological modelling, earth observation, and drones as well. You know, and one of the things that we're looking at is, yeah, you've got your installed sensors across a river catchment, but it's going to be very hard to have the density, as you say, that's going to look at every potential entry point for a pollutant into the river. So what we're looking at is something where a drone is housed bankside within a catchment with a range around it. And if certain criteria are measured within the water, we're not sure where it's coming from, it could trigger that drone to be released to go and take a sample and bring that sample back to the housing kiosk where it could get tested. So it's a way, swarming is great, but it's typically kind of, it'll come down the pulse with the river once. You've got to be there for the moment when that's happening. What we're looking at is how we could create something that is more reactive to when that pulse is actually happening and something wrong or good is going on and we don't understand why. This is a way for us to interrogate that. Citizen science also has a massive role to play. You know, in this too, and we're doing a lot of work. We've got a partnership with the Rivers Trust, who are doing a lot of the landowner engagement work for us around Section 82 across the UK. But we're really keen to look at how we can bring citizen science and test kits into this as well to bring up. Doesn't need to be perfect for regulatory data, but it can help with that diagnostic work of understanding where a problem is coming from. Yeah, it's going to take lots of different layers of data, I think, to find the right efficiency. You don't need a cannon to kill a mosquito on this, right? We don't need $20,000 worth of equipment every 100 metres up a river. You know, there are smarter ways to do it.
I know a couple of customers who are using drones based on water quality data. They're not using the drone to take a sample, but they're going up in the air and taking a long picture of the river. And that can often give an indication where things change just by sight. So I'm slightly connected as well. What do you think the biggest opportunities are in environmental monitoring in the next 5-10 years? It doesn't have to be water. It could be air. It could be soil.
I think there's a lot going on in rivers globally that we're not monitoring, and you can't control what you don't monitor. PFAS is going to be huge. Well, it's going to be huge from a monitoring perspective, I believe. And I think public health linked to water quality monitoring is also, it has potential to be a big area. You can look at everything from antibiotic levels downstream of communities to antidepressant levels in rivers downstream of communities to help look at where, for example, there's pockets of illness or sickness or poor mental health, which can help to inform focused intervention around that too. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to kind of think about this systemically. The big opportunity, I think, is around collaborating and doing this together.
Even given our experience of 5 years ago with pandemics, if you're going down that route, it could always be an early indicator that there's something going around the community as well. So
It's joining this all together, Tom, I think is the big opportunity, so that we kind of have a single source of truth on kind of environmental data, and different users and use cases can benefit from that, be that government looking at agricultural policy and what works and what doesn't, through to water companies just having better clarity in terms of where they should be investing CapEx and OpEx, because they've got a really clear idea of where there are problems. We're talking to some national entities around dynamic licensing. So permit licenses that aren't set and static year-round, but are linked to the environmental impact on the receiving water body. So I think that there's a lot of different ways if we can join this up together, rather than this slightly combative situation that I think can happen between regulators, water companies, and different catchment stakeholders. I think getting around the table and collaborating is by far the largest opportunity that we have. And there's an imperative to do it, otherwise nothing's going to change. Business as usual makes me want to rock in my chair, just because we're not going to get a different outcome if we just repeat doing what we've always done. So I think the biggest risk really is inertia and not looking at these new models and trying to do things in a different way.
Would you mind speaking a little bit more to how you see additive catchments and other third-party organizations playing a role in sort of bridging these two sides? It sounds like you're uniquely positioned between water companies and the public, who seem to have mutual distrust and even blame towards each other. And I'm wondering, what does that actually look like in terms of bridging that gap and trying to rebuild communication between the different groups in order to make this happen?
Yeah, definitely can. And that's exactly the role, Amory, that we're trying to position ourselves as. We're not a framework contractor to a water company. That's not our kind of MO. That's not what we're trying to do. It's not transactional in that way. It is around building civic infrastructure that all of the different catchment stakeholders can benefit from, including water companies and the government and the public. We work with a fantastic agency in the UK called 23Red. They're part of Capgemini, who are one of our backers and partners. And they are a behavior change agency. So they look at positive impacts. They do, for example, stop smoking campaigns for the British government, but using behavioral science behind that so that it's kind of rooted in science. So we're working with them on stakeholder engagement, public engagement, how the public wants to consume information about river health, where they want to consume it, because it's typically not on a water company or even our app, it's where they already are, and really looking at making sure we're building this in a way that thinks of it as a communications program first, that is backed up by good data and hardware, rather than an end of pipe compliance challenge, which is the kind of natural engineering approach that a water company takes. So that's that change from business to usual to doing something a little bit more collaborative and innovative that we're looking to do.
I know that a lot of this is focused around regulations regarding the Environment Act and Section 82, but in terms of a bigger picture catchment monitoring system, what does caring for and monitoring a catchment, like what does a healthy catchment look like if you were to incorporate all these other sources as well, agricultural and, you know, human waste from human communities and all these other things beyond just the water companies? Can you speak to what that looks like?
Yeah, I think we just need some smart adaptation to agriculture. Rothamsted Research have done a bunch of work looking at riparian buffer strips, which is basically where fields coming down to a river, you plant trees just along the border, and they can significantly reduce agricultural runoff, fertilizer runoff into rivers, as one example. So I think there's some adaptation. But the problem at the moment is that field isn't targeted as a source of pollution because we don't have the monitoring in place. So this is where I think we can start to design better ways of managing our environment if we've got the data. So water companies need to be held to account. Where there's problems, they will address them. Same with agriculture, same with highways. It's identifying where the problems are and then looking at how we can ideally bring in nature-based solutions to address them. So green infrastructure rather than grey infrastructure. And this is one of the other use cases that we're really keen to look at, is validation of these kind of green infrastructure interventions within that too. But it's nature bounces back quick, right? So if we stop putting our foot on the river's neck, which is basically what we're doing at the moment, all levels of biology will rise up, right the way down to microscopic levels, to salmon coming back to rivers, to the ecosystem of birds and insects around that as well. I mean, we're not the only species that lives on fresh water. So if you take your foot off the rivers, then life really does return quite quickly. Biodiversity, in one word, is what you get. You get biodiversity.
Quite like biodiversity as an endpoint. Biodiversity.
Internationally too, Anne-Marie. We're talking to multiple international government bodies around this program where there isn't that regulatory driver, because they're looking to make better decisions in the environment. So it doesn't only come through the regulatory driver fix here. I do think companies and utilities worldwide are starting to wake up to the potential. And there's significant cost savings for a lot of entities here in enforcement, in interventions that aren't very targeted, water companies being smarter or utilities being smarter in where they're investing. There's a strong business case here on a pure economic basis, as well as on a just doing what's right.
Thank you both for being here and speaking with us. It's been great to get this context and to dive into this a little bit and to hear more about monitoring over there and all of the considerations and stakeholders and dynamics that people are navigating as we're trying to improve the health of catchments and rivers. So thank you for this conversation.
No, look, thank you for the invitation to come on and talk about this. We're very happy to talk to other existing or potential customers of In Situ. I'm happy to kind of talk about our experience of working with them. Also very happy to talk to any policy workers or customers that could potentially be interested in the approach that we've taken collaboratively with In Situ too. But no, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Robin. And again, thank you for coming on. And I really, really can't wait to see where this relationship goes forward. It's been quite a fun 2 years so far. So
it's only just starting, right?
We'll get there. We'll fix the rivers.
Aquapod is produced by In Situ. In our next episode, we'll hear from Denise Devada of Moliere, industry leader in nanobubble technology, on how this cutting-edge approach to aeration empowers communities to restore lake health. In the meantime, you can visit us at insitu.com to learn more about our water monitoring instrumentation and software used around the world.